Good morning, everyone. This is Philip Holt, and today is Friday, February 19th, 2021, and the time is 9:25. I now call the meeting of the Finance Commission to order pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. We've had numerous individuals contact us regarding their outages and so forth, and will not be able to attend the meeting due to the weather conditions and lack of power and such. So these individuals will be asked as to be excused absences in accordance to the Finance Code 11.103. The commission members will take a vote to either accept or deny this request. All in favor of excusing these absences say aye, and those opposed will say nay. Can I hear the ayes?
Aye.
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 The ayes have it. Commissioner Cooper, will you make a roll call at this time?
Yes, I will. So I'm going to do a formal roll call. I think I see everybody on, but let's go ahead and do that. So for the record, Philip Holt.
Present.
Dr. Armstrong. Dr. Armstrong will not be attending. Bob Barkoff.
He will not be attending.
Bob Barkoff will not be attending. Hector Cerner. Hector, I heard you earlier. Are you on? Okay, we'll come back to Hector. Molly?
Present.
Thank you. Larry Long?
Present.
Thank you. Will Lucas?
He's not able to join us, Commissioner.
Okay. Cliff McCauley, are you on?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Sharon McCormick?
Here.
Thank you. Laura Nasser Warren?
Present.
Thank you. And Lance Puente?
I'm here.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go back to Hector. Hector, are you on?
Yes, I am on.
Thank you, Hector.
Thank you.
Okay, stand by. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Chairman, we have a quorum with 8 members present.
Thank you, Commissioner Cooper. Will is not able to join us due to the lack of utility service back at his residence and office.
So we have 3 out or 4 out?
We have 3 out. Dr. Armstrong, Bob Barkoff, and Will Lucas.
Thank you.
We'll now move on to the Finance Commission matters. If there's anyone wishing to address, go ahead, Commission.
No, please go ahead.
If there's anyone wishing to address the Commission during the time of public comment, you will need to use the webinar platform in order to be recognized. You must use the raise your hand feature on your screen and submit the agenda item you wish to comment on using the questions feature. Please comment on non-agenda items are limited to 5 minutes and the agenda items are to 10 minutes. Any comments relating to a rule may be made at the time of the rule discussion. In accordance with the Finance Commission's policy on testimony, public comments are not allowed on agenda items related to the final rule adoption except upon majority vote of the Commission, in which the comments are limited to 10 minutes. Do we have any audience members wishing to provide a general comment today?
Chairman, we do not have any comments.
Thank you. Members will take Commissioner Cooper. There's nothing on commission consent members for the commission, correct?
Sure, you're breaking up a little bit, but I do have some information about Finance Commission operations. Would you like me to proceed?
Let me just make sure we don't have any comments from any of the commissioners regarding any of the public comment or anything from the consent agenda. Members, do I hear a motion to accept? Do I hear a motion to adopt and consent agenda items A1, B2 through B4, and D2 without discussion?
Molly Curl, second.
Laura Warren and Molly Curl. Any discussion, members? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Ayes have it, and the motion passes. We'll now move on to item four, Finance Commission Operations. Commissioner Cooper, thank you for joining us and carrying on.
Thank you. All right, so I want to just briefly mention the legislative session. COVID-19 certainly has made this a very unusual session, and then obviously this week we've had the bad weather, so it made it more difficult for the legislature. So as of this morning, approximately 2,719 bills have been filed. This is about 100 less than the number of the bills filed for the same period last session. 720 bills were refiled from last session. There is less than 4 weeks left for legislatures to file bills. Friday, March the 12th is the deadline for filing, which is the 60th day of the session. So committees have now been assigned, but no bills have been sent to committees other than the general appropriations bill. And each agency has been providing you with the bills that we're tracking. I'm going to pause now to see if anybody has any general questions about the bills. Hearing none, Wendy Rodriguez did send out an email to the members last week, which is a very good analysis of how a bill becomes law. So if you have any questions about that, I think that analysis provides a very good analysis of it. So, Mr. Chairman, that's all I have for General Finance Commission Operations.
Thank you, sir. Members will now move on to item number five, the Audit Committee Report. Chairman Curl, could you please give us your report?
Thank you. The Audit Committee would like to make a motion that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2021 first quarter investment officer report.
Coming upon the recommendation from the Audit Committee, no second is needed. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The ayes have it and the motion passes.
The Audit Committee would like to make a motion that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2021 first quarter financial statements.
Thank you. And coming upon the recommendation of the Audit Committee, no second is needed. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Ayes have it and the motion passes.
The Audit Committee would like to make a motion that the Finance Commission approve the appointment of Justin Acola as a new Grant Advisory Committee member.
Coming upon the recommendation from the Audit Committee, no second is needed. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Ayes have it and the motion passes. Thank you, Justin, for serving in this capacity.
Commissioner Holt, that's the end of the Audit Committee report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, we will now move on to item six, Commissioner Cooper. Wendy, are y'all still there?
I'm still here. I don't hear Commissioner Cooper. He might be on mute.
Well, thank you very much. I did a real good job on that mute. So let me start over. Last meeting, we talked about the sunset recommendations that required legislative action. So master page 15, we have the state auditor's office report on Sunset Commission management actions. And it's divided really into two pieces. So table one would include the status of the agencies that state auditors actually did a follow-up on. And then table two includes the agencies that basically did the self-reporting. So if you would, let's go to page 20. On page 20, you see right in the middle of the page, you have the Department of Banking. The item was to direct DOB and the Finance Commission to develop an updated complaint process by rule. And so it shows that that is fully implemented. Then if you go to page 21, top of the page, the Finance Commission was directed to develop a budget policy that fosters more straightforward budgeting and fee setting. And they reported that that item is fully implemented. Then if you could turn to page 23, about three quarters down on the page, you have the OCCC where they had the complaint process to be updated by rule and then to direct the agency to make enforcement orders available online. And both of those items are reflected as fully implemented. Then we go into table two, where we have self-reporting, so to speak. You can turn to page 33, down at the bottom of the page. Department of Banking direct the DOB and Finance Commission to develop an updated complaint process by rule, and we have reported that that is fully implemented. Then, if you will, turn to 37. First, you have the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending. They were to have a complaint process developed by rule and then direct the agency to modify its penalty matrix to ensure consistent application. And both of those are reflected as fully implemented. And right under that, you have several items for the Finance Commission, the Finance Commission was directed to do things. And if you will look at those items on page 37, those items listed there are showing as fully implemented. And if you'll move over to page 38, the first item about developing standard practices, tracking and reporting travel expenditures shows fully implemented. And then the last item there, direct the Finance Commission to minimize duplication of agency functions. And it shows substantially implemented. This report says that the status report was to be presented to the Finance Commission on October 16th. That report was presented to you on October 16th. And it showed several items that were in process. And some of these things, if you will, are going to be kind of ongoing. So I think, again, if you've had some time to look at some of the other agencies, it'll show that the Finance Commission and our three agencies are pretty far along, if not fully completed in the process. So I would think it would be considered a good report. I did fail to mention one other. You go to page 47. Up the page, OCCC, again, complaint process developed in rule and to make the enforcement orders available online. And those show to be fully implemented. So again, a lot of information there, a lot of update. So Mr. Chairman, unless there are any questions, that would complete our report on the state auditor's report.
Thank you, Commissioner Cooper. And I think on behalf of the Finance Commission, all three agencies and the teams that you have did a terrific job of getting these all completed in a timely fashion for our sunset review. So kudos to all three commissioners and your teams for helping put this together and completing it in such a quick fashion. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Moving on to items 7 through 10. Commissioners, do you have any items needing to be discussed in open session for items 7 through 10? Hearing none, we're going to be, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, the ACCC does not have any items to be discussed.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner.
Nor does SNL.
Nor does the Department of Banking.
Thank you. We'll be moving on to the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending. Commissioner Jones, would you please give us your report?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. SNL's report begins on page 61 with the savings bank information, which is where I will begin on page 63. For thrifts, the December 30th financials, as does happen on occasion from the FDIC, were not completed in time for us to put detail in this report. We will have that detail at the April meeting, but we, based on preliminary numbers, we are seeing the assets continuing to increase. With regard to thrift and COVID, we continue conducting exams off-site due to COVID and now due to weather as well. I do want to mention the weather, the storms, and the impact on the state savings banks. We have been notified by 50% of the savings banks of closures due to weather. The extent of those closures varied from delayed openings to limited hours to foreclosure. And the reasons were no power, no water, staff unavailable to literally get to the offices, or a combination of those three. So as of this morning, we have 4 branch locations that will be continued to be closed for today. The savings bank charter and merger activity on page 64, the merger application relating to Capital Mortgage Bank and Bison State Bank has been withdrawn. After these materials were published or were due, we received a conversion application from Keystone National Bank to convert to a state savings bank. So that application is under review. Mortgage begins on page 64 with licensing. Licensing has seen significant growth in the mortgage industry. The renewal period ended December 31st. That is the time when every licensee must renew if they want to continue originating loans. That is always our time of highest revenue on the mortgage side. Now we're in reinstatement period, which ends February 28th. Reinstatement period is for those who did not renew but meant to, and so they can get reinstated through the end of this month. At the same time, we have new applications continuing to come in at, comparing January 21 to January 20, we saw individual licenses grow 25% and entity license applications grow 12%. But we'll have a final total on what happened during renewal and reinstatement and where we are with new applications at the April meeting. Overall, between the new applications, the number who renewed, the number we anticipate reinstating in the next few weeks. And we anticipate that we'll continue to see an increase in the mortgage population, and we'll continue to receive a high number of new applications, at least through the end of this fiscal year. Exams are on page 64. Due to COVID, we continue off-site examinations. And I do wanna mention reaccreditation on page 65. The agency was accredited in May of 11 on the mortgage side by the American Association of Residential regulators and Conference of State Bank Supervisors Accreditation Program. We are up for reaccreditation. We have chosen to go through that process. The reaccreditation is an in-depth review of an agency's policies, procedures, and operations to determine if it meets the standards that have been set by the Performance Standards Committee of those organizations. It also reviews statutory authority to determine whether the authority granted meets the standard of that same committee. This is something we do voluntarily. It is not required, but we have decided to voluntarily go through the reaccreditation process. On page 65, operations, I'm going to start with risk management. And I want to mention two aspects of what risk management team has been helping the agency through. First, and this part's in the book, COVID. We're continuing with our COVID protocols and with no more than 50% in the office on a regular basis and hand sanitizer, social distancing, and masks. We did have an incident in which a staff member, several days after being in the office, tested positive for COVID. So we went through the steps that we had prepared in case that should happen. We were able to determine what other members of the staff could have been in contact with this person. They were there the same day. And so we had them each quarantine and then be tested to get a COVID test so that if it was negative, they could come back to the office. If not, then of course they would not. As it turns out, no one who was there that same day did test positive. Everyone tested negative, so we were in the clear on that. We were glad, very glad that that was the result. And we did the cleaning, the required cleaning that is done after one has had someone in the office who has tested positive for COVID.
Commissioner?
Yes.
Vince here. Just interested on the quarantine, twofold. Did they get paid during that time, and did they work from home during that time?
That is correct. They got paid because they were equipped to work from home. So their work time did not change. They did that from home as opposed to coming back to the office, and they were able to do that full.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Those are both very good questions. I appreciate that. The other risk management issue I want to mention is the weather situation. I mentioned that with regard to the savings banks. The department also has been impacted by the winter storms due to staff, about 50% of the staff at some point during these storms, either not being able to work from home due to power outages, sometimes for days, sometimes intermittent outages. The other part of the staff has not had outages. So what we did while the staff was unable to work, and obviously they didn't, but as people's power came back up intermittently, they did work. And then those who did not lose power were working full time as we would have otherwise. And again, we're all equipped to work from home unless we don't have power. That's an issue, but as long as we have power. So we worked very hard to balance, knowing that some did not have the ability to work from home for points of time, but also wanting to make sure that we continued our service to consumers and to the industries as we would any other time. So that was one of our goals, was balancing those two factors. And I do want to point out, we did not lose any connectivity, so the agency had no interruption to its internet for those who actually had power to get onto it. There was no interruption of service from that part. Then on accounting, CAPS continues to be a major focus for the accounting folks, and there's more about that in the materials. There were also several reports required to be submitted subsequent to the last Finance Commission meeting, and those have been submitted timely. Other financial information has been discussed elsewhere in the materials. So I will move to HR on page 66. The investigator positions have been filled, and the other positions are in various stages of the hiring process. Turnover. Through January 31st, We've had two retirements and one voluntary separation. And at the April meeting, we will have the numbers fully through second quarter to present to you. And then moving on to measures on page 67, we have met or exceeded our measures so far. With that, I'd be glad to answer any questions, take any questions. So hearing none, I will call on Ian Berry to give the legal report.
Commissioner, this is Ernest Garcia. I'll be giving the legal report.
Oh, okay. Oh, good, Ernest. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me, sir?
Major Garcia, I hear you loud and clear. Please proceed.
Thank you, sir. Starting with the legal activity report, beginning on page 68. There we have a snapshot of fiscal year 21, first quarter, regarding our open complaints. With respect to the aging of our open complaints, these two charts on page 68 reflect that 81% of our complaints were aged less than 90 days and 0% of those complaints were aged greater than 180 days. Of our open complaints, about 60% were servicing related, which is, I think, consistent with what we've reported previously. On page 69 of the legal activity report, we turn to complaints received. 62% of the complaints received during the first quarter of fiscal year 21 were servicing related, and we had an increase of 2% in the volume over the first, compared with the first quarter of 2020. Turning to page 70 of the legal activity report, in relation to the closing of files during the first quarter, over 90% of the servicing, as well as over 90% of the non-servicing complaints, were resolved within 90 days and closed. We've had a decrease in the number of cases referred to enforcement from our investigation section during the first quarter of fiscal year 21 compared to fiscal year 20. We've had 24 enforcement actions during the first quarter of fiscal year 21. We had three in November in relation to the commissioner issued three orders in November in relation to exams. Turning to page 71, four orders were issued in December, and regarding investigations as a result of investigations in November and December, four orders were issued. Since the last Finance Commission meeting, we had two recovery fund applications. One of those was denied, and the other one is currently under investigation.
Hey, Ernest, can I ask you a question? This is Molly.
Yes, ma'am.
Page 70, when we're talking about the enforcement actions, is that just related to mortgage, or what's related to banking versus mortgage? And should we maybe make the chart a little bit, break it out by banking versus mortgage?
We've not had any enforcement actions during that first quarter in relation to banking, which is why it's not detailed or broken out separately. This is all related to the mortgage side of things.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
And regarding the, on page 71, we talk about a few civil matters and some other litigation issues. I believe we reported on all these cases before, so I'll just kind of hit the highlights. In the SOA case, the Abu Chabi matter, this was a license denial, and on January 4th, the commissioner issued her final order, totally concluding that case regarding the license denial, and that was a final order adopting the ALJ's proposal for decision on the license denial that went through the SOA process. The John Trend litigation matter, the bankruptcy adversary, that's still pending settlement. The Attorney General's office wants to make sure that the defendant and his counsel sign off on everything before they take it entirely through their approval process within the Attorney General's office, and that is still pending. But again, assuming that gets approved, there will be penalties and attorney's fees in part that will be non-dischargeable. but it will provide for a permanent injunction with respect to the defendant's unlicensed activities, both in, on the origination side and servicing side. The next matter on top of page 72 is the Scott Marinelli matter. We were able to, with the Attorney General's assistance, to secure a final default judgment on December 9th of last year regarding the unlicensed activities by Mr. Marinelli. And with respect to Mr. Wagner, we have a motion for summary judgment pending. They sought a continuance of that, which was granted. And so that is now scheduled for a hearing on March the 8th of this year. In November, December, we had 12 Public Information Act requests. And as far as gift reporting, we've not had any gifts reported since the last Finance Commission meeting. You heard Commissioner Cooper talk about the bills that are being filed by the various agencies. SML, as of this report, was tracking 209 bills, and we're now currently tracking 242 bills. And that concludes the department's legal activity report, pending any questions you might have.
Members, do we have any questions? Hearing none, thank you, Major Garcia. Appreciate the report. Commissioner Jones, is there anything else to add to your report?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This concludes SML's report.
Thank you, Commissioner Jones. We're going to be moving on to the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. Commissioner Pettyjohn, would you please give us your report?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the opportunity to provide the report for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. Before I launch into that, first of all, I want to say, take a moment to say how grateful I am for everyone, staff, and everybody we've worked with over this last week, for being so flexible and how folks have worked together and pulled together over the last week. It's been, as you all know, quite a difficult set of circumstances. And despite all the significant disruptions across the state, we were able to continue our operations at least at some level in all departments. And I know it's been quite an ordeal for some staff, especially hard, quite an ordeal for really most people, but especially hard on others who've been hit pretty hard, but we're glad everyone is safe. I'm glad the sun is shining and it's going to start warming up. So I appreciate the commitment and just the steadfast resolve that all have shown through this. And we're grateful we're able to continue to serve the public without any substantial disruption. And so that for that we are grateful and looking forward to consistent recovery from this, as well as continuing on dealing with pandemic. But and from that, I want to turn to a couple of comments on recent economic data before launching into the reports themselves, as I typically do, provide you some comments on the economic data. And we see the New York Fed has recently published its report on quarterly household debt and credit. And so there were some interesting observations, I thought, in that report. Total household debt last year increased $414 billion to now $14.56 trillion of total household debt as of the end of December. So despite the pandemic, we see a pretty significant increase last year in household debt. Mortgage balances, which make up the largest share of household debt, grew by $182 billion in 2020, and that's the largest increase that we've seen since 2007. Home buying and refinancing obviously expanded, especially with that massive shift to working and learning from home. People refinanced and invested in new homes, what have you. Credit card balances increased by $12 billion in the fourth quarter, but balances overall were still $108 billion lower from a year earlier. That's the largest yearly decline since they started tracking this through this report since 1999. So that decline in those year-over-year numbers seems to be in response to many credit card holders reducing their spending and maybe using some pandemic relief checks to pay down their card balances, but we did see a reduction overall in credit card balances. We saw increases, though, in auto loan balances by $14 billion during the fourth quarter, and student loan balances rose by $9 billion. In total, all household debt not relating to housing, which is credit card debt, auto loans, student loans, and other debts, increased by $37 billion during the fourth quarter, but still overall below pre-pandemic levels that they saw at the end of 2019. So those are some interesting observations about how the American public has responded during the pandemic and you know, turning the levers a little bit about on their household finances. But, you know, we try to watch those trends and certainly see, you know, some of those increases in auto finance and things like that. Those come back and, you know, we see the results of that through the activities in our regulatory activities. So it's all, I find it all pretty interesting. Turning now to the report, we'll start with the Consumer Protection Report. Starts on page 95. And in reviewing the chart on the bottom of page 95, it's a little bit of apples and oranges here as we look at this time frame, because September to December of FY20 was pre-pandemic. And then, of course, the FY21 data is affected by the pandemic. But nonetheless, our examination department is on track to meet their production targets or the examination performance targets for fiscal year 2021. We continue to see good improvements in our effectiveness and efficiencies as a result of focusing our project management approaches to support remote exams, and this combination of remote exams, hybrid exams, and even we're doing some field work on some certain exams too, and that all seems to be working together to kind of help make us more efficient to achieve the work that we need to do. Moving on to page 96, you'll see some of the positive results in the acceptable level of compliance. We see all industries at or above the 90% mark. The benchmark for this activity would be, or these results would be, 85%. So it's really good to see the positive compliance rates well over the benchmark. Moving down to page 97, there's information on investigations. Investigations is an area that we're continuing to lag behind this year. These are some of the most difficult types of activities for us to accommodate remotely. Usually these require on-site visits and to conduct an actual investigation. Sometimes we have not very good responses trying to conduct these by mail or email. But we continue to make a little progress in the area. We've made some staffing changes, which I think is going to help us focus some additional attention on the area. But, you know, we'll work throughout the year to try to, you know, continue along with this and make sure we're making some reasonable progress in the area. We did adjust the performance targets back in the summer when we set them, because we anticipated that there was going to be some difficulty completing some of these investigations. Moving on to...
May I ask a question?
Certainly.
This is Vince. On those investigations, I got two questions. Are y'all totally not doing anything in person as far as with clients or with our?
No, we've been doing examinations. We're doing certain field work in person. But the investigations are difficult to do, but we'll do examinations. Some examinations are happening in person. Some are handled completely remotely, and some kind of have a hybrid approach. We do part of it remote, we do part of it on site. We went back on site during the summer in a number of situations, but we have to work with the company to make sure they have a place to accommodate us, and we can, you know, make sure we maintain safety protocols. But yes, we are doing some on-site field work.
Okay, and if we go back to the bottom of page 96, acceptable compliance levels, CAB soared from 56 to 99%. Would that have been because of remote examinations weren't able to be as critical?
No, I mean, this chart can get a little confusing. We are trying to show a lagging 12 months of data at one time, and there were just, we had had some significant non-compliance issues kind of that happened in Q3 of FY19 that kept that number down. And then it was just a matter of timing when those fell off the 12-month lagging time. And then the examinations that have been conducted since then are showing better satisfactory compliance. You know, we work to bring people into compliance. So when they have had a bad exam, we go back and do a follow-up exam. If they've corrected that, then we have a positive rate of compliance. So I do not think it is because we were less effective at determining things. There are some challenges that, you know, not being in the office, there may be some things that are more difficult, but I was on a panel with a number of regulators from other states yesterday with the American Financial Services Association industry group, and it was kind of consistent. We were hearing really compliance seems to be up right now. There's additional focus on compliance management systems, and compliance overall seems to be trending a little bit higher at the moment. So that's a consistent trend I heard from fellow regulators.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, we were moving on to complaint activity on page 98. Number of complaints closed is running almost 5% ahead of last year's activity. So we're seeing more activity in the complaint area. Of course, sometimes this can be a preliminary indicator of compliance concerns. So we monitor that very closely. Motor vehicle sales finance continues to be the dominant category of complaint. And then you'll see the other data presented for the other categories and the other information. If you moving down, I was just looking at table 3 a little bit about sort of how some of these complaints were resolved. And interestingly, over half of the complaints were closed with some type of action taken on the complaint, whether that was a directive to provide a refund or to take some other type of affirmative action. Processing of complaints continues to be within expected guidelines, with 93% of complaints being resolved within 90 days and an average processing time of about 42 days per complaint. Moving on to the licensing report.
I have one more question. Yeah, yes. I'm sorry. And maybe it's in the chart, I'm just not reading it correctly. So there's 542 complaints. Then in the charts below, it refers to 430 complaints. So that's one question. And then does anywhere here, it talks about, well, of course, 66 were non-jurisdictional.
Right. That's
how many of the 542 were actually legitimate complaints?
Well, that's what I was trying to get to when I was saying it's hard to say legitimate because some of them don't close, but that's what table 3 attempts to try to show you, how many were close to investigation, how many did we take some kind of action on. You see the ones closed, no violation. So those were, we determined, it's hard to say not legitimate, but sometimes there might be not a violation of law. They may be complaining about customer service or something else. And then you'll see some that were closed administratively because the complainant didn't follow up. Typically is what we needed more information from the complainant. They didn't follow up, so those get closed. And then, a few non-jurisdictional in that category as well. But the difference between the 542 and the 430 mostly relates to the non-jurisdictional complaints. That's the primary difference. I can't, I'll get somebody to.
That's okay.
More detail on sort of where else the delta is related to those numbers, but I probably got something right here already.
All right, once again, thank you.
Yeah, well, and there's a time difference. I got the answer. So the chart above is a 4-month period, right, from September to December, and the chart below, these are the quarterly totals, so that's only 3 months. Yeah, so it's a time difference. Okay, moving on to the licensing report. It's on page 102. You'll see if we start off with information on renewals. Notable highlights on this report are the fairly high levels of retention that we showed throughout the licensed entities during the recent renewal cycle. We'd anticipated a little bit of possible weakness in the retention rates given what was going on in the economy and the impact from the pandemic. We thought we might see some attrition that greater than normal, but really the renewal rates came in pretty strong. New license activity continues at its steady pace on par with prior years. If you move on down to the dashboard on page 103, that reflecting our normal activity, including usually if you I look up at that top left chart with the licensees, you see the drop off between Q1 and Q2, and those are the motor vehicle sales finance folks that did not renew. And that's normal and expected. We always have that little dip. So that was on page 104 to 107 are the reports on financial education, communication, sunset, administration, HR, IT, and accounting. We've covered a lot of details on all of those in the audit committee. So I don't really want to belabor those and go into any more depth. I don't have any additional comments, but of course we'll be happy to take any questions on those type of items. And if not, did want to mention the quarterly performance report on page 109. You see these are the quarterly output measures that we provide, and there's only one performance measure that was not met or exceeded, and that was the number of business applications processed. And processing new applications was really impacted by the heavy renewal period in the first quarter for motor vehicle sales finance. It's expected that this performance is going to move into line with expectations during the remaining quarters. And then before I turn to legal, I just thought I'd go ahead and add some comments on the legislative activity, which you've already heard about. Bill filing deadline's coming up on March 12th. The session is expected to end on May 31st, although there very well may be some special sessions dealing with other items, specific items. You are receiving from us a weekly report of sort of the core legislation that affects the OCCC regulated industries and the statutes that we have regulatory responsibility for administering. There are currently 10 bills on that report that you receive. Our observations are that this session, legislators have not filed as much legislation affecting our industries as they have in past sessions about this time. We had about 19 bills on that core track in 2019 compared to the 10 we have now. The bills that we see on that track this session seem to be focused more on credit access businesses, payday and title loan companies, and then some mortgage-related bills. But in addition to the core bills, we're also tracking a number of other bills that affect agency operations or might have some indirect effects on the industry. In total, we're tracking about 264 bills presently. Of course, we don't list all of those for you in the report because it would be too much, but we want to make sure you knew that we're monitoring those as well. In June, when the session has concluded, we'll give you a summary of those bills that affect the agency or the industries, and that may include some of that broader scope of bills. Anyway, that's a brief report on legislative activity. I'd be happy to answer any questions from our reports. And if there are no questions, I'm ready to turn it over to Michael for the legal report.
Good morning, members. Can you hear me?
Yes, Mr. Rigby, thank you for joining us. Please proceed.
Michael Rigby, General Counsel for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. The legal report begins on page 110 of your materials. The first item on page 110 is an order revoking the motor vehicle sales finance license of 1&2 Automotive LLC. This is a DFW-based dealership that we had received several complaints about. We issued an order to revoke their license in October of 2020, and that order is now final and enforceable. There were two other orders that were issued kind of in the background or in the context of the 1&2 Automotive revocation. The first matter was an order issued against Auto Bueno LLC, doing business as the Auto Cave, and North Texas Financial LLC. We issued an order in November 2020 ordering them to cease and desist unlicensed activity, take affirmative action, and make restitution. Those entities requested a hearing, and we have docketed that hearing at SOA.
In a similar vein, we also issued an order on the same date against Primalin Capital Partners LP and Good Floor Loans LLC. Again, this was an order to cease and desist unlicensed activity, take affirmative action, and make restitution. Again, both those entities requested a hearing, and we have separately docketed that case. So there's two pending cases, two pending orders, and each of the orders and cases has two unlicensed entities that are responding to our order. On page 112, we have some updates on federal rulemaking. The first one is a rule issued by the Office of Comptroller of the Currency, the OCC, not our agency, but a federal agency. There's an update in paragraph 2 on January 5th, 2021. Several states filed suit against the OCC regarding their true lender rule. The next section below that is the CFPB's debt collection rule. Again, there's an update in the second paragraph. In December, the CFPB made additional rulemaking action prohibiting lenders from threatening legal action on time-barred debt and several other elements to that that rule action that are spelled out in our report. Finally, on page 113, we have some updates to the advisory bulletin. This is COVID advisory bulletins that we've been regularly issuing throughout the pandemic. We extended the effectiveness of those bulletins through the end of this month, and then recently we extended them again through the end of March. And that's all I have this time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Yes, Michael, going back to 112 on the OCC true lender rule, and again, I may just be misunderstanding something, but why did those states file a case? I'm referring to New York, California, et cetera.
Sure. So this is, again, this is on page 112 of your materials, the federal rulemaking section. The federal government, the particular agency of the federal government, the OCC, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, passed this rule, kind of overturning several case decisions. Those case decisions found that when you're trying to figure out whether a particular party is responsible for actions, you can look to what's called the true lender. That is, if there's a bank and a non-bank involved in a transaction, does the non-bank get the federal protections or exemptions that would apply to a bank? Some courts have said, yeah, you can look to the true lender, who truly made the loan, who truly benefited from the loan. This federal rule kind of overturned those cases, said, no, those cases are wrong. Our rule is that if a bank issues the loan, then it's a bank loan. Some states didn't like that, and so they have sued the OCC, and that's kind of what that litigation is about. Does that make sense?
Well, but why wouldn't they not like it, or why do we and why do they not?
Well, we're not a party to that suit, so Texas is not involved in that litigation. My understanding is that several of those states had taken the position that the earlier court decisions were correct, that you should look kind of behind the forms to who is the true lender, who's really making the loan. And they concluded that under that analysis that it's really the non-banks who are making the loan, and therefore, you can hold those folks responsible. Does that help?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Okay, thank you, Michael. Mr. Chairman, I think that concludes our report for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner.
Thank you, Commissioner Pettijohn. Members will be moving on to the Texas Department of Banking, and Commissioner Cooper, would you please give us your report?
Certainly. So the Department of Banking's report starts on master page 117. And before I do, Vince, following up on your question, I thought Michael did a great job of responding, but the former acting comptroller of the currency is no longer there anymore. And he was acting. He did a lot of things to basically overturn what they basically said we could do anything we want to. And so several states have made challenges not only to this, but to others. For instance, CSBS has filed another lawsuit against the comptroller for creating a charter that we feel like is unconstitutional. So you're going to see more and more of this. It's also questionable whether when the new comptroller comes in, if they ever get confirmed, if they may overturn some of these that the acting comptroller did. So in my opinion, it's kind of a sad situation when an individual decides that he can change things without going through due process, but that's why we have the court system. So thank you for letting me mention that. So the Department of Banking's report starts on 117, but before I go into the report, I want to mention three general issues. First one I want to talk about is cybersecurity. With all the issues that our financial institutions have to face, I continue to believe that cybersecurity ranks at the top. The SolarWinds incident is a prime example. We sent you an article on SolarWinds in December. I still think it's one of the best articles that I have seen. It kind of sums up what happened. Some of you may have seen Sunday night, 60 Minutes ran a report on SolarWinds. It was a supply chain attack that hit U.S. government agencies, states, and municipal agencies, critical infrastructure entities, and the private sector. The threat actor was very sophisticated, probably one of the most sophisticated attacks that we've ever seen, and it was of Russian origin. So we did have a handful of banks that were impacted, and our IT people, examiners, worked with these entities as they applied the protective remedies. On the, just for the financial sector in general, banks, anything financial related, the good news is that this was more like a reconnaissance mission. Where they got in there and kind of dug around and tried to see what they could get, as opposed to what I'd call a search and destroy mission. And so generally speaking, the financial sector was not their major target. But this has caused massive updating and patching. It's still going on. And as mentioned in the 60 Minutes episode, it's not over. It probably won't be over for years. Last month, I mentioned the ransomware self-assessment tool that we helped design, and now it's gone nationwide for all of our banks to use. And we have adapted that to our non-depository institutions. And I just want to remind the Finance Commission again, I think you're going to be seeing more and more of this. Philip Hinkle, our Director of IT Security Examinations, is considered an expert in this field. Both Philip and I have top secret clearance, so we're using that to help our banks. We have 13 dedicated IT examiners that help evaluate our bank's cybersecurity position and are now involved as we examine our money service businesses. We work with TBA and IBAT on resource sharing and educating our banks and trust companies. And then at the national level, I don't think I've talked about this before, but bike service companies are becoming more important as bikes increase their reliance on what we call third-party service providers. At the national level, we are trying to get Congress to update the Bike Service Company Act, which would make it clear that the federal agencies should openly share examination information with the state bike regulators. Right now, the state bike regulators' activity is silent in the act, and some of the federal agencies are using that as a reason not to share the information. They would like us to share information with them, but they don't really want to share information with us. So we thought we would get this this modified last Congress, but obviously with everything going on, it didn't make it, and we hope we'll be able to get it passed this Congress. As the state representative on FIBIC, and that FIBIC stands for Financial and Banking Information Infrastructure Committee, which is coordinated through the Treasury Department, we really had a good working relationship under the previous secretary. We expect to have a good relationship also under Secretary Yellen, as we have worked with her many years in the past. And they're going through their transition of personnel, but Treasury has really done a good job in help coordinating these cyber security activities. So I say all this, basically, I just want to let y'all know that this is an important area for safety and soundness of our institutions, and we're going to be devoting more time in this area. The bad guys, as I've always said, the threats are evolving, and we have to evolve too in order to help our banks in this area. And then I'd like to go over the Paycheck Protection Plan. Our Texas banks are actively involved in this program once again. Through February the 7th, the PPP loans approved this year so far approved about $1.2 million in loans total for about $101 billion. 5,022 lenders have been involved. Texas ranks second behind California in total production at $7.8 billion in loans. Cross Bank ranks 15th in the nation with $754 million in loans made to date. So congratulations to Frost and to Cliff for a job well done. But I just really want to say to the Finance Commission and anybody listening out there, but congratulations and thanks to all of our Texas banks and savings institutions for their effort in getting these funds out the door to our businesses. This, again, another novella effort as before. And then finally, before I get into the report, I want to talk about the weather. All of you know the devastation that just happened in your area. Leslie mentioned the appreciation that we had for our personnel. I've been on many conference calls where our people have been without power for a couple of days, but they're out in their cars where they can get cell service and our iPads charged up to make the calls they need to make. So probably not too different from your businesses that y'all operate and the personnel that y'all have as employees. I think our people really did a good job of coordination. I think possibly this meeting we're having right now is a real good example. Our banks had the ability on an emergency basis to close for three consecutive days, basically at their discretion, but for an emergency basis. Many of our banks closed on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So today, if you would have been the fourth day where they would have had to come ask us for quote permission. So on Wednesday, I issued a proclamation that allowed our banks to close at their discretion in areas impacted by the severe weather. Roughly, I'm going to say roughly around 40% of our institutions have had closures to some degree because of inclement weather, roughly 40%. I believe our banks needed this flexibility, and I have full confidence that they will be using this flexibility appropriately. So thank you for letting me go into those general items. Now I'm going to go up to our report, if you will, on 117. Again, it shows we have 216 banks, 330 billion in assets. So the number declines a little bit. The number, the volume of assets goes up. On page 116, down at the bottom, talks about our quote problem banks. We are still at a low number at 7. While we continue to expect the number of problem banks to increase due to the economic fallout from COVID, we all remain cautiously optimistic that because of the stimulus measures and everything else that's going on, and hopefully by the vaccine distribution and the resumption of businesses, that this may temper the increase in our number of problem banks. So it's just a wait and see. On page 119, at the bottom of the page, talks about our compliance with examination priorities. We're okay on IT and our trust activities, but we're outside our guidelines for commercial and foreign bank examinations. We are 7 bank examinations were started late. We're about 13 days late. So the reasons for the delay are multifaceted, but I think with time we will be able to catch back up. And under 120, talking about our division highlights, I've already mentioned Solar Winds. I want to again mention we now have 7 new commissioned examiners. We've had 5 last year, 2 this year. Really an accomplishment by these young people to reach that level, because as I've told y'all before, our commissioning process is fairly grueling. The COVID-19, we are continuing to do all our examinations remotely. So as are the federal agencies. We do some of our exams jointly with the Fed or the FDIC, but I would say half of our exams are done, or probably over half of our exams are done independently. So we're doing those remotely. So through Teams meetings or whatever, we do feel like that while it's not the best thing, that we still believe we are doing what we need to do. And I will say that it's sometimes we may have to have face-to-face communication because of an investigation or something like that that requires a little bit of on presence personnel, but we're trying our best to do everything remotely for the protection of our employees and the bank and MSB employees also. Then beginning on page 122, we always talk about the application process and corporate activities. We continue to see increases there. On page 123, gives you some detail about where those applications are coming from. Bank related 24, 26 from the money service businesses, a big activity in money service businesses. So for conversion or charter activity, Bell Bank finally converted officially to from a state savings bank to a commercial bank, and they did that in the end of the year. Affiliated bank in Bedford was a national bank, and it converted to a state bank and changed its name to Susser Bank, that we talked about a little bit last meeting. And First Bank and Trust acquired one of our banks, so the number went down, but the number of assets that we supervise stays the same. And then we did have a de novo trust company that was added to the state system. Then beginning on 124 would be the non-depository section. You see the numbers that we've had. There's kind of an uptick a little bit in the MSP numbers. Down at the bottom tells you the snapshot of the condition. You will notice that we've had an increase in the number of three rated institutions. Most of that is in the perpetual care area. We don't believe that this is really a trend because some of the issues that caused us to be a three-rated institution appear to already have been in the process of being corrected. So hopefully those numbers will not go up and maybe will even go down. Page 125 talks about some examination activities. I'll only note two items. We are through CSBS and NMLS system for the mortgage side is going through a major, major overhaul. And we're trying to implement what we call the state examination systems, primarily on the non-depository side, which helps states coordinate multi-state examinations better. And we are doing a pilot of the first MSB examination, I think, along with the state of North Carolina, to hopefully see how this works. So it is not the best thing to be a guinea pig, but we thought we ought to be the first to try it out for size to see how it works. Then down at the bottom of the page, I mentioned earlier the self-assessment tool that we originated for banks. We've now adopted it for our non-depository, primarily our MSB area. Then on 127, we only have three positions that are actively posted. We have some vacancies, but we're going to let the dust settle a little bit before we start trying to hire a brand new examiners again. Page 128 gives you the snapshot of our personnel, resignations, things like that. I would say basically everything is kind of the same, nothing unusual. On page 131, we have the complaint area. And again, start of a new season for this. The numbers basically are the same as we've always seen. And we continue to process complaints as they come in. And I believe, unless there's any questions, I mean, I appreciate y'all giving me the extra time to talk about those general items because I feel like the Finance Commission needed to know a little bit more than the sterile information that we produce for you. But unless there are any questions, we can go to the legal update.
Members, any questions?
None of this. Okay.
Catherine, are you on?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good morning, Ms. Ryer. Good morning. Please join us. Thank you.
Thank you. So the legal division update begins on page 140 in your materials. And just a couple of items to mention here. The first item on that page refers to a cause of action that was filed in Harris County District Court. This is the action brought by a homeowner who was dissatisfied that he was not able to obtain a cash out refinance of his home. The case was originally filed, if you'll recall, against Mid-America Mortgage, which is a licensee of savings and mortgage lending. The plaintiff eventually brought in our chairman, Philip Holt, as well as Governor Abbott. Last month, Mr. Shea added Commissioner Jones to the lawsuit, even though there had been a previous order issued by the judge in that case, sort of possibly questioning the dismissal or question. There was an order issued that could have been interpreted to dismiss the whole case, but it was a bit unclear. The AG has since gotten a clarification from the judge, and now it appears that Chairman Holt and Governor Abbott have been dismissed as parties. However, it is our AG's understanding that Commissioner Jones remains a defendant. The AG will continue to represent SML and Commissioner Jones in that proceeding, and we fully expect that Commissioner Jones will be dismissed as a defendant as well, and that case should be going away soon. The second matter on your list refers to another district court case. This one was filed in Travis County. This was filed by a gentleman who was seeking a declaratory judgment that a license to conduct money transmission would not be required for his proposed money transmission business. The case remains pending. Last month, the AG did file its answer in the case, and so that case is proceeding along. The AG's answer seeks to have the case dismissed based on a lack of jurisdiction. Moving on, there were six final public orders issued during the period. Five of them were against unlicensed or money service businesses that had either been conducting unauthorized activity or had violated our laws in other ways. There was one prohibition matter, this top of page 141, prohibition against a former bank employee for misconduct, basically theft occurring at the bank. So that order was issued and it became final since the last meeting. So that appears on this report. During the period, we received 17 requests for public information, and we made one referral to the AG for an opinion. That's about normal activity there. No gifts received since the last meeting update was provided. And then there's the table at the bottom of page 141 that summarizes our quarterly order activity. So I would be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ryer. Commissioner Cooper, anything else for your department?
Unless we have questions for the members, that's all we have, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Members, do we have any comments or questions for the three commissioners and their teams?
I would just say, in general, all these commissioners do an exceptional job. Certainly their staffs do, and in light of the pandemic that keeps going on and now the weather, it's just amazing. And I'm thankful for living in the great state of Texas and all of our resources, and that we will get through all of this. And I am ready for us to meet voluntarily in person for our next commission meeting.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Puente. I echo your praise of the three commissioners and their agencies. I think that they've done a tremendous job of treading through these trying times and continuing to serve the public while providing the guidance necessary for the industries that they regulate. So that's a true challenge that they've
they've met the challenge and exceeded it in my eyes, and I commend all three agencies and their teams and the commissioners individually for doing such a terrific job and providing us all the information we need as a board that oversees the three as the Finance Commission. I think all of you will agree that we've been kept informed completely along the way, and anything that we've had questions of, they've stepped up and answered that completely for us on a number of occasions on a number of topics. So thank you all three for that and your teams for doing a terrific job. I would like to also recommend, if you know, sooner than later that we can meet in person, Vince. I don't know what the guidelines will be laid out by the governor's office. I know that the legislature is struggling with some of these same topics right now, going through the committee hearings and such. So all of us want to get back to some normalcy as quickly as possible, and I know we'll do it when it's safe and allowed. So with that being said, there's no further business to discuss. This meeting of the Finance Commission of Texas is now adjourned at 10:45 a.m. on Friday morning. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and continue to be safe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you all.
God bless all of you.
Thank you.